From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find them in doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. And a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. Have we reached our boiling point or breaking point for the Kansas City Royals? Have we gotten that close, less than 30 games into the regular season? Yeah, as you know, the Royals lost last night. They've now lost three of their first four games on this long road trip. They fall in Texas last night, a Texas team that's truly not expected to compete for an AL West title or not even really for an American League wildcard spot. I think now we're starting to see some separation around Major League Baseball of who's going to be contenders, who are the pretenders, and who are just the teams that are going to bottom out. The Royals right now, they're a team that's going to bottom out. If nothing changes, that is their trajectory. And if you're like myself, if you're like Marco, man, has it been tough to turn on the TV, flip it to Bally Sports, and watch 3 hours of Royals baseball. And it's something I didn't envision happening so early into the season. We haven't even reached June yet. Yet the Royals are a just dismal product right now on the field. Nothing changes. It's the same loss every single night. Struggling in the first inning, scoreless through four. If it's competitive, the Royals don't score runs till late when the game's already out of hand. That's exactly what happened last night. Gave up three in the first with arguably your best pitcher on the mound in Brad Keller, or at least he has been this year. And first inning has been a disaster for the Royals. And when you can't score, you can't have those type of first innings. That's why the Royals have lost 18 of their first 27 games. When you put your offense, which already can't score, into a 3-0 hole, you're not coming back. You've lost that game 15 minutes in. And this reoccurring issue doesn't really have a solution. What would be your solution? If you're a manager, if you're a coach, if you're Dayton Moore, if you're J.J. Piccolo, if you're John Sherman, if you're a player, what's the fix? What's the solution? I thought there was a very interesting quote last night from Rex Hudler. And you know what? I do think the Royals broadcast crew is phenomenal. I really enjoy both of them on air together. Ryan Lefevre gives you great play-by-play. Rex Hudler gives you the interesting commentary from a former player. Yeah, at times he can be goofy, but that's what makes Rex Hudler Rex Hudler. But very few times throughout the season does Rex Hudler seem like he gets irritated by how the Royals are playing. I remember it specifically last year that the Royals were in Anaheim. It was on a West Coast road trip, and they were on an abysmal losing streak. I don't think it was the 11-game losing streak in May, though it might have been now that I think about it. It might have been closer to June. But the Royals were in Seattle, they were in Oakland, and they were in Anaheim. And they were in Anaheim, and they hadn't played well all series. And it was the series finale. The Royals were down 9-1 or something. And it looked like they were playing with no energy. And I think Hudler noticed that. And Lefevre, or maybe it was Fizioc at the time, I want to say it was Fizioc, had mentioned that Hudler had been kind of quiet that game. And Huddler flat out said, you know, I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I'm ticked off that this is the way they're playing. And Huddler almost never seems ticked off, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how many bad seasons there's been while he's been the broadcaster. He usually keeps a positive spin on the game. Some people like it, some people don't. But Huddler does, at times, give you the reality. He gives you the truth that, no, I'm not going to be happy when they're playing this poorly. And last night, I found an interesting quote, whether he meant it or not, but it was something to, I guess, keep an eye on, to see if anything else, or keep your ears open for if something like that was said later on in the game. And it involved Cal Eldred. And I think he tried to spin it as a positive or to praise Cal Eldred to say that, you know, he's got a tough job. But the words were, if Cal Eldred could fix it, believe me, he would have done it. That to me felt like, okay, so Cal Eldred can't fix this pitching problem. He can't develop the pitchers you need him to. And maybe Huddler in his mind was just saying, well, this will take some pressure off Cal Eldred, that it's not like he's not trying. Because we know these coaches, their front office, they're all trying. But this is a league about production. If you aren't producing, you're not going to get any sympathy cards. You know, in Kansas City with the Chiefs were 2-4. Was anybody saying, oh, well, Andy Reid, you know, the guys, they're still playing hard? No, we were very critical of the Kansas City Chiefs. That same energy needs to be pushed on the Kansas City Royals. And though the Royals are not in the same echelon as where the Chiefs are, they're not top tier in the league. We expect more from the Kansas City Royals, especially this year. This team, with the talent they'd accumulated, they're not 9-18. That is not a 9-18 team. There is one team in Major League Baseball with less wins than the Kansas City Royals. It's the Cincinnati Reds, who lost 23 of their first 26 games. They still have the second worst run differential in baseball, only ahead of the Reds. They have the worst run differential in the American League. But what Huddler said last night, I think, is slowly kind of that tipping point. That now, with as much anger that we've seen all over social media, and listen, I'm going to speak to the fans here that you have every right to be frustrated. If you're a season ticket holder, if you're spending money to go to the game, if you have the Bally Sports app and you watch these games, you spend money, you take time out of your day to watch the team, you have every right to be frustrated. And it's not like you're criticizing the players for it. It's just you're frustrated because you know they're capable of more. And I know sometimes, you know, players, you want to defend the players and say, well, hey, don't say you hate them. I don't hate anybody on that team. I don't hate anybody on the coaching staff. You can be wildly frustrated and irritated about the product on the field, which is fine. That's a part about being a sports fan. But I think most of us are in the boat at this point where we're kind of losing interest. And if you're not going to make a move, which with the Royals front office and everybody working in that organization does not want to happen. You know, we all think that anger and frustration be the worst thing you can show a front office or a team. It's not that. It's losing interest. It's stop coming to games. It's putting 5,000 people in Kauffman Stadium on a Tuesday night when the Royals are 30 games under 500. That's the worst thing that can happen for a baseball team, when their fan base stops caring. But a lot of people you've seen on Twitter, on Facebook, maybe on Instagram, they're already losing interest before we've hit mid-May. And it's because nothing has been done about the product on the field. The Royals are waiting. They're using the approach of these hard hit outs, these outings where maybe somebody gets bitten by one or two pitches, eventually luck goes your way. Karma comes back. You know that this is all going to turn around. And guess what? It's going to. It's probably going to when the Royals are 20 games under 500. When a hot stretch in June when you're in last place is not going to do anything for the season. It only moves you up in the draft order. Or moves you down, in fact. Excuse me. So the Royals, the worst thing that can happen for this team is they win 70 games. 70 to 72 games. So they're worse than they were last year, and they'll probably select in the 10 or 11 range. So you're not picking top five with 70 or 72 wins. You're worse than you were last year in the MLB draft, yes.
No, I was wondering, I was asking you, that's implemented this year, right? The MLB, aren't they doing a lottery this year with it?
You know, now I think about it, they are doing a lottery, but having 70 or 72 wins I don't think would put you in the lottery. It would be right. I mean, I guess from the NBA standards you can be, but you'd have what? How many balls in the lottery raffle? A couple?
Yeah, and I'd have to look up exactly what the numbers of how they're going to do it with the MLB draft lottery, but that I think that was something that was put into the CBA before the season started.
That'll be next year.
Oh, next. Okay.
So 2023.
So you can't even benefit from that if you
the first six picks will be sorted via a lottery.
Okay.
For the 18 teams that do not qualify for the postseason.
I was trying to think of, hey, what's a way that the Royals can move up possibly?
Move up the lottery. But with the Royals here in this situation, they're coming to a crossroads already here in May that if moves are not made, if you continue to preach the same things over and over and over again, coaches speak, front office members speak. I mean, even last night, the post-game audio from Mike Matheny, it was, well, this team knows how to scratch and claw. No, they're never going to give up until the final out. The Royals win trailing going into, I believe, the 7th or the 8th inning this year, 7th, 8th, and 9th, are 0-11. Not saying they're not fighting, not saying they're not trying, but a team that's scrappy, that scratches and claws to the final out, they're not 0-11 when they're down to the final three innings. And, I mean, let's be real. The pitching staff is doing a lot. Some of those guys are really pitching their butts off, and the offense isn't giving them much. But it's lineup construction. The Royals simply don't have enough above-average hitters in that lineup. And the guys that going into the season were above average, they're far below average this year. It doesn't matter what lineup Mike Matheny constructs. They're going to get the same results with the same type of guys. All they're looking for at this point, if we're being honest, all they're looking for is one game with a spark, one lineup that just clicks. It's not going to happen, though. It's not going to happen without different pieces in that lineup. For example, tonight, they still have not announced a starter. My gut reaction is it's going to be John Heasley, a Texas native, pitched a little bit last year. It just feels like that's the most likely option. Brady Singer cannot make it. I got this wrong yesterday on Fact or Fiction. Brady Singer had to be in the minor leagues for at least 14 days. That would be Friday or Saturday when they're in Colorado. I believe he would be due for a start up then, and J.J. Piccolo mentioned yesterday that he expects Brady Singer to join the rotation soon. So probably out is Chris Bubich and Carlos Hernandez, in is John Heasley and Brady Singer. But for tonight, the lineup is probably going to be the same. It's going to be Bobby Witt Jr. leading off, who's now 1-for-13 in the leadoff spot. So his hot streak has been stunted by being put at the top of the order, where he was thriving down at the 6 or the 7 hole. Nicky Lopez, we forget at the beginning of the year, was thriving in the 9 hole. Moved up to leadoff, moved up to the 2 hole, struggled since. Now hitting sub 220. Whit Merrifield, he's hit leadoff, he's hit second, he's hit fifth, he's hit eighth. Nothing's working. Salvador Perez, he's hit third, he's hit fourth. Nothing's working. Ryan O'Hearn's playing first base, he's hitting cleanup. And by the way, Marco, I'm sure you've already seen this because this was a great tweet by Royals Farm Report. And I think this is where a lot of Royals fans are reaching their boiling point because, once again, Vinny Pasquantino hit his 7th home run last night in AAA. I don't know what they're waiting for, but let me give you a number right here or a stat that, if I can find it here, it's on Royals Farm Report. It was tweeted about yesterday afternoon. But it involved Ryan O'Hearn. Here it is. They said, while we're promising to stop talking about certain people, here's another. Ryan O'Hearn has literally been the worst player in Major League Baseball since 2019. There are 354 hitters with at least 500 plate appearances since 2019. Ryan O'Hearn is ranked 354th in F WAR with -2.5. But yet, the Royals have the idea that that is their cleanup man and the one hitting fourth and playing first base. That is the Royals' plan. Now, Ryan O'Hearn was in the lineup yesterday. I'm sure he'll probably be back there tonight because a righty will be on the mound in Matt Bush. I think a lot of you are allowed to reach your boiling point. I've said this phrase before, and it's a pretty common one in baseball. You don't need 162 games to find out whether a team is good or bad. Mark, we even said, what'd you say, 30 or 40 games? Maybe it was 50 for you.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, 50, 2 months worth.
50 games. I mean, for me, 30 games in, with this current roster, the current state of the rotation, the current state of the bullpen, I mean, it's not a good baseball team. Now, I was talking to Marco before the show today, and I know some people have gone two steps too far and saying, is this the worst Royals team we've ever seen? Pump the brakes here. If you were not a Royals fan in the mid-2000s, I mean, this team looks like a contender to you. If you were a Royals fan back in 2004, 5, 6, 7, there were just some, I mean, awful. The 04-05 teams, they didn't have a Bobby Witt Jr. They didn't have an MJ Melendez. They didn't have a Daniel Lynch in the rotation. There was nothing positive to look about with the 04-05 Royals.
Hell, you could even argue the 09, 10, 11s, those year, and 12s, the years leading up to where we had to just kind of take in those Royals teams, like the Jose Guillen, Miguel
Jose.
Tejada teams.
I like Tejada in 13. Yeah. The one, I mean, you go back to, let's see, I didn't mind him as a player, but back then we thought like Willie Bloomquist was a very valuable player at the time, being super utility, you know, loved Mark Tian, you know, Alex Gordon was still playing third base. You know, David DeJesus was a star. I mean,
Coco Crisp
was a big signing at the time. You know, it was moves like that. Octavio Dotel.
Yep.
Closing out games, or, you know,
Brian
Jose Lima. There were some teams that clear, like, from the start, it was, we're not competing. This team, you know, and I've said, you know, there's going to be some stretch here in the summer where you're like, man, I love turning on the games because Bobby Witt Jr. is firing on all cylinders. MJ Melendez is hitting. I'm sure Vinny Pasquantino's up at that point. You're like, I want to tune into the game. We get Brady Singer tonight or Daniel Lynch.
Yeah.
And Bobby Witt Jr. is at third. Pasquantino's at first. MJ Melendez is catching. Kyle Isbell's in center. You're like, I kind of want to go to the game tonight.
There's hope with these teams.
There's hope. And I think what I kind of liken this team to, and many fans aren't going to like this, I probably link them more to the 2010 Royals. Where 2010, 2011, I'll go with that. And I know some of you wanted it to be 2013 Royals, where they have the winning record, they're in it all summer, it's fun to turn on the TV, they're at a wild card spot. This team is very similar to the 2010, 2011 team off the surface, more of a hybrid, 2010, 2011. Because back then, they were still piecing together the roster with guys that had been there for a while. They go out and made moves for Melky Cabrera, for Rick Ankiel. They had Jeff Francoeur. And on the surface, you go, oh, those are good moves to help make this team more competitive. But the rotation was in shambles. They were still hanging on to Joaquin Soria. I mean, there wasn't much there as a whole, but you felt hopeful for the future because they brought up Eric Hosmer. Alcides Escobar was playing every day at shortstop. They were slowly finding guys in that bullpen with Tim Collins, Nate Adcock, Aaron Crow. You know, you could tell they were trying to fuse this young talent with talent that was already there. So trying to build around Billy Butler, Alex Gordon, and then they bring up Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, I believe, in 2012. So kind of that hybrid of 2010, 2011, 2012. And the Royals are trying that same philosophy of, here's Bobby Witt Jr., he's the quote-unquote Eric Hosmer. Well, Hosmer was up in May. Bobby Witt Jr. was the guy on the opening day roster. But you add him in, okay, then MJ Melendez is maybe your Mike Moustakas, for lack of a, I don't know, I mean, trying to compare everybody at the same time, because Kane and Escobar were up first. They already had their major league debuts in Milwaukee.
Yep.
But you're trying to put young guys around the team. And it wasn't until September of 2011, I believe, were Hosmer, Moustakas, I want to say it was 2011 or 2012, that year in September, Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, Kane, Salvador Perez were all on the field at the same time. It was the first game they were in Chicago, and they just thumped the White Sox. I mean, it was like 10-1. And you finally felt like, okay, now going into next year, I have confidence. But in 2012, they took another dip. Those guys had sophomore slumps. The Royals lost 90-plus games. And fans are starting to get irritated again. They're saying, well, now what? 2013, they flipped the switch a little bit. 2014, obviously AL pennant, you get to the World Series. 2015, you win it all. The thing is, though, I'm not asking the fan base to wait it out again, because I am somebody that believes the Royals will never get back to that point of competitiveness unless an organizational shift happens. And that's front office, that's coaching staff, that's trying to build this team like others out there in baseball. You probably haven't heard this much yet, Marco, throughout the Major League season. Do you know the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were supposed to lose 95 to 100 games this year, are, I believe, 16 and 14, if not 17 and 14. I think they won last night. They made one change. They brought in Brent Strom, that is, former pitching coach for the Royals, way back in, I want to say, the mid-2000s.
It seems like these coaches and players that lead the Royals become successful.
And Brent Strom was with Houston for a long time. Arizona saw that, said, that's going to help our pitching staff. Arizona has an excellent pitching staff with seldom talent, by the way. I mean, they have Mad Bum, but Mad Bum's no longer in his prime. They got Zach Gallen. They got Merrill Kelly. I mean, they've got guys that you probably aren't even, you don't even know who those are if you're listening right now. Arizona Diamondbacks have, I believe, a top five rotation right now in baseball. One change. They brought in the right pitching coach. Now, I'm somebody that says an organizational shift. The Royals are not going to gut their entire front office and gut their coaching staff. It's going to be a slow change over time. Now, I have this weird indication that if the Royals return on this road trip, if they, you know, lose this series in Texas or they're swept and they lose the series in Colorado, I have a feeling. I don't know what it's been the last couple of days. I have a feeling a move will be made. Because Alec Lewis, by the way, had a fantastic article. Go take some time out of your day and go read it on The Athletic. Really pointing out the truths with the Kansas City Royals and why this mirage, this trust the process, let's wait and see, it's played out. Because the Royals from 2018, when their rebuild started, to 2022, has not been the change that we all think it is. They've infused more talent into their farm system. That's a fact. But you can infuse talent into your farm system and still not get any better because the development is stunted. And that's where I think the Royals hopefully are starting to have the wheels turn in their head going, we can't have this fail. The guys that we're all counting on to be our next core group, they have to be good. And right now, I mean, we can't really say it with confidence, the 2022 Royals are light years away from the 2018 Royals. That 2018 Royals team was bad. But let's say this team goes on and loses 95 games. Are you feeling much better that they lost 9 less games than the 2018 Royals? No. Because there's still a lot of the same guys on that roster that there were in 2018. And the Royals make moves that are for the integrity of baseball. They're the feel-good story of baseball. And not in the way of the spunky underdog wins a World Series title. It's no, Dayton Moore does treat these players very, very well. It's why he gives them the big contracts. He will never trade somebody that's a fan favorite. If their jersey's in the team store, I've always believed, if their jersey's in the team store, they're not trading them. That's just the way it is. They want those players on the field when fans walk into the stadium wearing their jersey. They're never going to make that tough move. But it's also what separates them from other teams around Major League Baseball. When you are a team that refuses to make those moves, you get stuck in the same spot. And also, Royals Review had another great article this morning that they're still making the same mistakes as they did 16 years ago. Right? I think I've said this earlier in the week. If not, it was last week. I mean, Whit Merrifield is struggling heavily right now. Whit Merrifield has been a Royals fan favorite for years during these down years. And he is a great player. And he is somebody you want to see succeed. But did we ever take a step back and realize what the Royals did to Whit Merrifield is actually a negative thing? Whit Merrifield is now probably past his prime. He led the league in hitting for 2 years. And the Royals could have rewarded Whit Merrifield and said, listen, we're going to lose 100 games. What you deserve, being a super utility and leading the league in hitting, swiping 25, 30 bags a year, sometimes 40, you get to go play for a contender. We are going to put you on a playoff team where you can thrive, where you will get media exposure, And then after that year, if you perform well, you get the contract. The Royals did that to Mike Moustakas in 2018. They said, Mike, you've been great in Kansas City. This is going to hurt us to do, but we're sending you to Milwaukee, who we know is going to the postseason. We'll get some talent in return. They got Jorge Lopez and Brett Phillips. Take what you want from that. It wasn't a great trade for the Royals, but it was kind of eh for, what, a couple of months for Mike Moustakas in 2018. Moose went to Milwaukee, became the face of their deadline, or the trade deadline. Moose then produced in Milwaukee and then got a big-time deal with Cincinnati. Now, he's not playing very well in Cincinnati anymore, but he got paid. And that's what Whit Merrifield could have had. He got paid in Kansas City, but he's been stuck on the same team that's been losing year in and year out. And I think back then, I wanted that for Whit Merrifield because for a guy that had to stick in that organization, be passed over, even during the postseason runs, and then he gets up, he proves his worth, he stays on the field, he plays wherever the coaching staff puts him, he doesn't complain, became a fan favorite. But that's where the Royals made the mistake and said, well, he's a fan favorite, we got to keep on to him because he's going to be on our next contender. The Royals have misjudged how close they were to contention. Vastly misjudged. And now it's guys like Andrew Benintendi, right, coming into a contract here. I personally would like to see them extend Andrew Benintendi because they have no other outfield depth out there. And Andrew Benintendi's don't just fall off trees. But again, it's one of those moves that could hurt you in the long run. Because if you give him a four-year deal, who's to say Andrew Benintendi's producing 2 years into that deal? The Royals always seem in these last couple years to fail on making those free agent signings. Right after the World Series, they didn't make the right moves. In 2017, you get Brandon Moss, Jason Hamill, Travis Wood. They didn't work out. And I think once you get a different change of mind, a different frame of mind with your front office, things can change at a snap of a finger. Just like with Arizona. Just like with the San Francisco Giants. You see what they have done with seldom talent? They don't necessarily just find endless amounts of talent. They're not just falling into great situations. No, they're finding where guys have failed elsewhere, brought them to San Francisco, molded them into great players, let them play out their contract, and they let them go because they know they can continue to replenish their roster with talent. Pitching staff, lineup, bullpen, all of it. The Giants with probably the third most talent in the NL West led baseball in wins last year. Find somebody in San Francisco's organization. Find somebody in Oakland's organization that, despite ownership, just not even want to field a team this year, they still don't have the worst record in baseball. Find somebody in Arizona's system. You need new voices. You need changes because right now, for the Kansas City Royals at 9-18, they're not going anywhere. And we might be waiting for this change to happen, and it's going to happen. Baseball over 162 games, you get hot. But does it really matter if they get hot when they're 20 or 25 games under 500? I don't think so. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll talk about who the Chiefs will be opening up week one with in the regular season this year and maybe guess as where some of these primetime games will fall on the 2022 schedule. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Marco, thoughts on the Chiefs opening their 2022 regular season on the road in Houston against the Texans. Now, we know week one and week two. Texans week one, Chargers on Thursday Night Football week two.
Yeah. Don't hate it. Don't mind it. I like it. It's not I don't think it's going to be as much of a challenge going into it like it was for the Browns game this previous year. But I like it. Davis Mills, Patrick Mahomes, 12:00, CBS. That's not a bad way to start a season if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan.
And listen, I if you are upset about it, I don't know why the hell you are. The Chiefs have to play the Chargers on a short week's rest.
Yeah, true.
On Thursday Night Football. I don't want the Arizona Cardinals on the road in week one. I don't want any of that. I'd much rather take a Houston Texans team, which is going to win five games. You just, because, listen, we've seen the Chiefs in week one, even in their Super Bowl runs. They're not good in week one. Hell, they're not very good in week two.
Yeah.
They usually flip that switch in about week five, week six. The defense, this is, I'm going to paint a perfect picture for you, Marco. The Chiefs are going to play the Texans in week one. Mm-hmm. We're all going to go into that game thinking, oh, man, 35-10, just wipe the floor with them. No, I think the Chiefs will win that game like 38-28 or 38-30.
Yeah, I like that.
And Davis Mills is going to throw for like 320 yards. Yeah. The defense is going to look terrible. They're not going to sack him one time. Guys like, well, let's say like Trent McDuffie gets picked on, and we're all going to just completely overreact and go, my goodness, is the defense going to be this bad all year?
Right.
Davis Mills throwing all over you? I mean, I can already predict it's going to happen. Then I could see them going on Thursday Night Football, short week's rest. They lose to L.A. Like, that feels like the most likely scenario. But then, 4 weeks down the road, the Chiefs are just going to be thumping people.
Mm-hmm.
Just curb stomping every opponent. I really do believe that. Now, they got a tough schedule. They got to play Tampa. They got to play the Rams. They got to play the entire AFC West twice. But this has that feel where, kind of like Jacksonville, in that 2019-2020 season, the Super Bowl season,
yeah,
they opened up in Jacksonville. I want to say the field temp that day was like 105. I mean, like, dudes were just gassed. And we all felt like, this is the game. You know, we got Frank Clark now. We got Tyrann Mathieu. You bring in Damian Wilson.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hitchens is there for year two. You felt good about the defense. And then you find out it's not Nick Foles going to be the starter. It's Gardner Minshew. And Gardner Minshew just tore up the Kansas City secondary all afternoon. Now, the Chiefs won pretty comfortably because of Sammy Watkins' ridiculous Madden on rookie mode type of game. But I have no issue, just like I did back then, just like I do today. Why are we going to be upset about the Chiefs not being prime time or whatever, or have this big time opponent in week one? Don't you want to win? Don't you want to get out ahead like 4-0, 5-0 with as good as the AFC West is?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I saw some people complaining. Sorry to cut you off real quick. Some people complaining about, oh, well, the Chiefs aren't playing in their prime. They don't get, let's say, I don't know, the Rams on the road. Why? Why would you want to be the team to play the Rams in week one?
Exactly. Yeah. All good observations and reasons why you should be happy if, because it is a rumor, is it? Already been a confirmed
I believe
rumor.
It's pretty much confirmed at this point. I don't think until they release the schedule, I did kind of make the announcement, but I'm not going to lock it in until I see the
there
official schedule release tomorrow.
Well, see, and this type of opening season, regular season game for Kansas City reminds me of when they started week one on the road in Jacksonville back, I think that was Andy Reid's first season as head coach of the Chiefs, 2013. It's not a tough opponent. I think the NFL is giving the Chiefs the benefit of the doubt, knowing that they are going to be having their home opener on a short week against a tough team like the Chargers. That's going to be a really good week two Thursday Night Football game. But you mentioned how this game could be close. Because for those reasons right there too, I don't think Andy Reid is going to try to pull everything out of the playbook for this game. I think he's going to try to go in with a minimal game plan that would look similar to what they may put out there on Thursday when they play the Chargers. So yeah, it could be a close one because the Chiefs may not be playing their best out there right off the bat. And you need to prepare well for this game against Houston so that you're better prepared for the game against LA, because the Chiefs and Andy Reid, over his whole career, has been really good against teams in the division. So there has never been a more important year to get a great head start in the division wins or collecting wins in the division than this year right now, in the way that the AFC West is going to be like.
Now, we don't know the full schedule. We'll find that out tomorrow night. But we do have the opponents that Kansas City will play. And I think there are a chunk of teams on here I feel pretty damn comfortable they can beat. Now, again, odd circumstances can happen. You know there's going to be some rematch games and even games that I think probably not the best chance to win. They'll probably have one of those monumental type of season-changing wins.
Mm-hmm.
But here's their home opponents. They got Denver, the Raiders, and the Chargers. We already knew that. They have the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. They have the Tennessee Titans at home. They have the LA Rams at home. They have the Seattle Seahawks at home. They have the Buffalo Bills at home. Jags, Titans, Seahawks are probably three of the easiest wins I think you can have. Call me crazy. I think Tennessee's not going to be good.
Yeah.
They lost A.J. Brown. They don't have Julio Jones. They have Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill.
That AFC
and Treylon
South
Burks.
Is wide open this year, it seems
like. Oh, completely. But then you got L.A. and you got Buffalo. One of those is going to be primetime. Let's all be real. It's going to be Buffalo and Kansas City. L.A. will probably be like a 3:25 kickoff. And then you have those three AFC West games. Now, on the road, once again, those three AFC West opponents, we know the Texans in week one. Mm-hmm. You got the Indianapolis Colts, the San Francisco 49ers, the Arizona Cardinals, the Bengals, and the Bucks. I feel pretty confident in thinking Texans is a lock win. Unless Jonathan Taylor goes bonkers, I can see the Chiefs handling Matt Ryan and a mobile quarterback. The 49ers, if it's Jimmy G again or if it's rookie Trey Lance, I feel pretty fine. I feel confident. The Arizona Cardinals will be a fun game. Depends where they play the Arizona Cardinals, though, because we remember DeAndre Hopkins is out for the first six games of the season after being suspended for PEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you play the Cardinals in week four, the Cardinals are terrible without DeAndre Hopkins. Then you got the Bengals and the Buccaneers. Are we really to believe that Patrick Mahomes will go 0-3 against Joe Burrow in his first three times playing him? Now, I don't want to jinx him, right? And that is going to be a very passionate game. I've always believed that even after the AFC Championship game, when I saw the opponents come out and I saw, number one, Buffalo on the schedule at home and Cincinnati on the road, I went, those are two games that are going to be incredibly chippy.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, at this point, I think their players, especially after what Eli Apple said after the game and stuff. Now, Eli Apple, is he going to be back in Cincinnati? I think he's still there. Unless he was a one-year deal.
No, I think he's back there.
If he's back, I mean, that is going to be a chippy, chippy game. Now, Tyreek Hill was probably going to be the front and center of that chippiness because Eli Apple targeted him. Mm-hmm. McCole Hardman was another one. But I feel like those two games, the Bills hate the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Chiefs hate the Cincinnati Bengals. Because the Bengals prevented the Chiefs from getting to a Super Bowl. The Chiefs prevented the Bills from getting the Super Bowl. Those are two primetime games in my eyes. I think they'll probably save that Cincinnati game for later in the schedule. Could be wrong, but that's just my hunch. Now, I did say, we'll do this before we go to break real quick, of picking some primetime games. I feel almost a lock at this point that they're going to put Russ and Mahomes on primetime at least once.
Yeah.
Like a Monday night football on Mile High. Because they had primetime football. Was that a Monday night at Arrowhead? Or that might have been Sunday night football when Denver came to Kansas City this last year. I don't know why they put it on primetime because it was Teddy Bridgewater versus Mahomes.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy too? That was a game that wasn't even supposed to be played on Sunday night. They had flexed it.
They flexed it, and it was weird. Uh-huh. It was one of the most. That was the most boring game I saw last year.
And then, of course, the regular season finale being at Denver was a Saturday game.
Yes, that was a Saturday game. It was with
the college football.
Yeah, I liked Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit on the call. By the way, for that. Mm-hmm. But I think probably one primetime game with the Broncos. They'll probably have to choose between Raiders and Broncos.
Well, I think I saw, and it's a rumor from a leak account that Raiders is week 18 on the
really?
In Las Vegas.
In Vegas.
But it's a 3:25, not a prime.
So that was a leak. That would be
that
interesting.
That was a leak, though, rumor, yeah.
See, they're doing that with the idea that it's going to be a divisional race at that point.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. But I think it's been a while, I want to say, since the Chiefs have hosted the Raiders on like a Sunday night football. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Last time they probably hosted the Raiders in prime time, that would have been, that might have been the Thursday night football game.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill's rookie season.
Gosh, that game was cold. I was there. Oh boy, it was like negative 10. But they'll have to choose between the Raiders or the Chargers. Jags, no. Titans, no. Rams, I just don't feel it. I think the Rams would be like a 3:25 kickoff at Arrowhead.
Yeah.
Because I think Buffalo is going to be that other primetime game.
Yeah, it depends what other games are going on.
I think the home primetime games for Kansas City will be Chargers for sure. We already know that. The Bills and then either Broncos or Raiders. Now, on the road, actually, I'm going to say no to the Broncos at home. I just feel they're going to have a primetime game in Denver.
They always do it.
It just feels like in a week five game, they're going to put it in Denver. And that's going to be the big time. This is the end of the streak. Russ is going to dethrone Patrick Mahomes. I had that feeling. So I'm going to go Broncos, not at Arrowhead, Broncos at Mile High. Chargers, no. Raiders, no. Texans, no. Colts, no. 49ers, no. Cardinals, no. Bengals or Tampa Bay? Man, I think it's going to be Cincinnati, not Tampa.
Really?
I feel like the storyline is much bigger at this point for Joe Burrow and Mahomes than Brady and Mahomes.
I think it's both, honestly.
So you have six then?
Oh, yeah, and that's the number of primetime games I had last year, too.
Okay, then I'll lock that in. I'll go Cincinnati and Tampa.
Yeah. That Colts one is just, or the San Francisco one is sneaky, too.
That you know what? You're exactly right on that. They'll because do like a Super Bowl rematch if Jimmy G's still the quarterback.
Yeah.
And one of those weird flexes or something like that.
Yeah, out there in San Francisco, too. That always makes for a beautiful venue in a night game. I'm just thinking about that 49ers win over the Rams. I think that was a Thursday night game.
Mm-hmm. Very underrated stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It's Levi, right?
Yeah, the jeans.
I always want to call it Candlestick, but Levi is deafening loud. Even in the postseason, man, that place was erupting on almost every single play.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not be shocked if they tried to do some Super Bowl type of rematch. But those are your opponents for the Chiefs this year. We'll know tomorrow just exactly when all those opponents will fall on the Chiefs' schedule. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll recap what has happened in the NBA and then finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. So what has happened in the last 2 days in the NBA postseason? Will start on Monday, round two, game four between the Celtics and the Bucks. Went to the Boston Celtics, and how about that? Who would have thought that Giannis Antetokounmpo staring down Al Horford and Al Horford getting pissed off would just change the direction not only of this game, but maybe the series? We'll see what happens tonight in game five, but I would have not expected that from Al Horford, who dropped 30 on 11-14 shooting. Now, Giannis had 34 and 18 rebounds. I mean, he's just the Greek freak, but still, Boston's hanging in there. And I thought Milwaukee would by far and away run Boston out of the building. I thought Milwaukee could probably win in five. Not going to happen anymore. That'll probably go six or seven. That has probably the biggest game seven feel to me. It has now since Monday because of what Al Horford was able to do. I mean, even Al Horford posterized Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, it was ridiculous. I've never seen Al Horford play that pissed off, but he did and led Boston to a Game 4 win, so it was knotted up at 2-2. The Warriors beat the Grizzlies in Game 4 by a score of 101-98, moving up to 3-1 in the series. Again, Game 5 is tonight. In that game, Steph Curry had 32 points on 10 of 25 shooting, and Ja Morant was not playing in that game, by the way, so that was one the Warriors needed to steal. I believe it was Jaren Jackson that led them in scoring, yes, with 21 points on 0 of 7 from beyond the arc, but he was 7 of 21 from the field. So the Warriors went up 3-1 on Monday night. On Tuesday night, it was the Miami Heat blowing out Philly, 120-85 to move up 3-2 in the series, about to put James Harden and Joel Embiid back on the couch to watch the rest of the postseason. And, man, I mean, you feel like at this point, Miami has to win Game 6. I don't think they can let this one go into 7 games because I'd probably give the edge to Philly, which is tomorrow night on Thursday. It'll be in Philly for Game 6. It just kind of has that feel that Miami needs to capitalize when they're up on Philly. Though Miami's the one seed, I just don't know if you can doubt Joel Embiid and James Harden for that long. But on Tuesday night, boy, Joel Embiid and James Harden were not good. Embiid only had 17 points on 7 of 12 shooting in 33 minutes. Harden only had 14 points on 5 of 13 shooting from the field. Tobias Harris also 5 of 14. Tyrese Maxey 2 of 10. They did not shoot well. As for Miami, very well balanced even off the bench. Jimmy Butler led the team in scoring with 23. They had 12 from Bam Adebayo. PJ Tucker had 10. Victor Oladipo had 13. Tyler Herro had 10. So Miami on Tuesday night went up 3-2. Then the Suns as well went up 3-2 after blowing out Dallas by a score of 110-80. Phoenix right now on the doorstep of returning to the Western Conference Finals. Luka Doncic, that is, for Dallas, led the Mavs in scoring with 28. Jalen Brunson had 21. Nobody else really scored that much for Dallas, as with 80 points. That checks out. As for Phoenix, they were led in scoring by Devin Booker, 28. DeAndre Ayton gave him 20. Mikal Bridges had 14 and only 7 from Chris Paul. But off the bench, tip your cap to Cameron Johnson, who had 14. As for tonight, it'll be Boston and Milwaukee at the Garden, tipping off at 6 p.m. on TNT. The Celtics are a 5.5-point favorite with the over-under at 214.5. And the late tip-off at 8:30 p.m. on TNT. It'll be the Warriors trying to close out the series against the Grizz in Memphis at the FedEx Forum. Warriors are a 4.5-point favorite, over-under at 218.5. So some great action in the NBA tonight. And as for tomorrow, 76ers will look to stave off elimination against Miami in Philly. Sixers are a 2.5-point favorite, over-under at 207.5. Tip-off will be at 6 p.m. on ESPN. And the late tip-off will be in Dallas. Phoenix going to close out the series against the Mavs. Suns a 1.5-point favorite with the over-under at 213.5. Again, tip-off at 8:30 p.m. on ESPN. Now it is time for some Fact or Fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, Fact or Fiction, John Heasley starts tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure this is what's going to happen is the minute I get off air, they're going to finally announce a starter unless they already have. But John Heasley feels like the best fit at this point. He's pitched just fine in Omaha. If it can't be Brady Singer, I feel like it's going to be John Heasley, a Texas native. This feels like the perfect chance just to maybe give some sort of spark for the Royals.
Right.
If John Heasley's pitching, man, I got to tune in. I feel like I don't even want to tune in. But John Heasley would be a cool guy to watch start tonight, and hopefully he can get the Royals somewhat back on track.
Fact or fiction, Andrew Benintendi represents the Royals in the All-Star game.
I mean, is that even really an honor at this point? It seems like by default, Andrew Benintendi, who's actually had a great year, is the guy that is by far and away going to be the favorite. Maybe you could give it just for fun to Zach Greinke. I mean, I would. But Andrew Benintendi, no, Stammon, I don't think you could get it. Gabe Spire still isn't allowed to run. If Gabe Spire keeps cruising, why not? But I think Andrew Benintendi with the name, it's going to be either Andrew Benintendi or Zach Greinke. I feel like those are two likely candidates.
Fact or fiction, the Chiefs have 6 primetime games this year.
Yeah, I like what you pointed out. 6 last year, why not 6 this year? Even more great opponents on the schedule for the Chiefs, but we will find out for sure tomorrow night as they had the schedule release. But I'll go fact, definitely 6 games for the Chiefs on primetime.
You're going to be doing a schedule show tomorrow?
I'm not,
okay,
no.
Okay, all right. Just checking. I didn't know. Yeah, I wanted to get you a promo there. Fact or fiction, Chiefs score 40-plus points in Week 1 versus Houston.
I don't know what it is. Even with Andy Reid not introducing the entire playbook, the Chiefs always just completely blow open other opponents in Week 1. I mean, Cleveland, they scored 40-plus. Played Houston a couple years back, and they scored 40-plus. I'll go fact. They always just have that feel to it. Even without Tyreek Hill, this offense is going to score a lot of points in Week 1.
Fact or fiction, the Warriors in the series tonight against Memphis.
Fiction. This one's going to go into 6 games, I think. I think Memphis does at least stave off elimination one more day, and there will be a Game 6, but I think the Warriors will take it in Game 6. There's Ray Charles, so it is time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City. What you say? Hit the road, Jack.